Welcome to Urban Tales, a podcast that delves into the minds of young entrepreneurs that have moved to New York City in search of professional development, and maybe even some personal development along the way. I'm your host, Maya Sargent, and today I'm joined by Aubrey Hubble, co-founder of Hazel, an innovative femcare brand for the ever-evolving woman. Hazel sells products that look to empower women by solving some of the hindrances that confront us in our daily lives. In their mission statement, Hazel aims to help women at all stages of their lives, from marriage to motherhood to menopause and beyond. As the co-founder, Aubrey has drawn inspiration for Hazel and the running of her brand from her undergraduate degree in digital design from the University of Colorado, from her study of Scandinavian design in Copenhagen in Denmark, and her experience as a product designer at a wedding planning and registry platform. Today, Aubrey and I will discuss how her background in design has influenced Hazel, where she found the gap in the market for her business, and how she has navigated life as a small brand that focuses on confronting non-visible obstacles to women's health in the vast landscape of New York City. So Aubrey, welcome to Urban Tales. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. So excited.
So lovely to have you here. So you've had, from as I discussed in the intro, quite a travel journey yourself that's led you to New York. Do you want to start by giving us a little backstory about yourself?
Sure. So I have lived in every part of the country. I grew up living on both coasts and then eventually in the Midwest before coming to New York. I grew up visiting New York. I always wanted to move here. I imagined as like probably an 11-year-old, all the things that I experienced living in different places, making friends, you know, in new places, and just getting used to new environments was something that definitely informed how moving to New York and then just meeting so many people and then eventually starting my career here definitely informed kind of how it all happened and my take on it. I think each place I lived in, I definitely learned a lot. Whenever I meet new people, I can always relate to something. My stepdad is retired military, so there was a lot of influences there too. I met so many different people.
I traveled a lot as a child as well, and I think you kind of the skills that you develop shape you massively. I think, like you say, learning to be adaptable, you especially like New York, I think it's so multicultural. Different parts of my childhood play off in different areas of New York.
Yeah.
So although you've lived in many different places, you've settled in New York for some time now. What was it about the city that made you want to stay here for longer than anywhere else?
You know, I came here because I loved fashion. I loved architecture, still love both. And it was just a city I was drawn to. And what has kept me here is the opportunities, the community, the culture, the energy really that's here. Starting out, getting my first job here all the way through to now, I've just met so many amazing people. And New York is really home, especially in the little neighborhood we live in. You know, we know our neighbors. It doesn't feel like that stereotypical experience of, you know, people talk about New York like it's Times Square, and it's anything but.
What do you think it is? Because I've spoken to a lot of people and they all mention that community of New York.
Yeah.
Trying to explain it to listeners that maybe don't live in New York, what do you think it is about it that is so kind of electric?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think of New York, you think it's so big. When I moved here and the first job that I got, I actually realized that it's actually a really small world. I had no idea the world I was entering into when I got my first job, but everyone knows everyone. You're one degree from any introduction, any, you know, brand, person that you want to meet. I feel like it's just the world is so much smaller in New York than people realize.
So as a co-founder now of a fantastic business that I really just love everything about it, the visuals, the brand, the mission that we'll get into in just a minute, how has your opinion of New York changed over the course that you've been here?
I think it's been interesting. I mean, also living here during a pandemic, that's been interesting because meeting people, it was different. You weren't going to networking events or going out with friends as much. So I think that definitely impacted. I actually made more friends out of New York than I had before. But I don't know. It's definitely a lot smaller than I thought. I didn't expect how homey it would be and how comfortable it would be. You can just walk outside your house and everything is so much more accessible.
So I want to swiftly transition into talking about your brand, Hazel, and how that has played out against this environment of New York City that we've been talking about. So for the listeners, can you explain Hazel to me, where the inspiration came from, and how did you get into this space?
So a lot of it goes back to my career background, so I can share a little bit about that. So I started out in New York, and I've worked for several brands focused primarily on women in specific life stages. So the first company that I worked for was called Cricut Circle, and it was a baby registry with an editorial component. Really talked about all those taboos that no one was talking about at the time as it related to pregnancy, postpartum, and life with a newborn. So I learned a lot there. It was an amazing experience. It was fun, engaging. And then I followed the founder of that company, Rachel Blumenthal, to her next venture, which is Rockets of Awesome, a kids fashion and tech company. So it's similar to like a Stitch Fix where, you know, you sign up, you get clothing. We did it seasonally and it was for kids. So what was fun about it was we had a quiz that you would go in and kind of collect all the preferences. And so we would collect all those preferences and then send them clothing each season based on those preferences. So there I bridged both the brand team and the product team. And I even kind of dabbled with the exec team. I was helping them with fundraising. And then I even helped the fashion design team. We had an in-house fashion team. And I would design graphics for the kids' t-shirts. So just a little bit of everything you could see, touch, or feel. And on the brand side, I was doing photo shoots, helped develop the brand, illustrations, all of that. And then on the product side was doing a lot of digital development and user research. And I really enjoyed that process. You know, just engaging with that consumer, which was primarily moms, getting to know what their pain points were and how we could make their lives easier through this platform. And so I wanted to lean more into that when it came to my next career move. And actually my VP of product at the time, Esther Park, she introduced me to Nobu Nakaguchi, who's one of the co-founders at Zola, a wedding tech company. At the time, they were just a wedding registry. So I joined as their first product design hire. And during my time, shortly after, we launched a whole suite of wedding tools. And while there working on the wedding registry, I started working with an over 50 audience, specifically women. So I brought them in. I did user research with them. I tested different product enhancements and optimization and just really got to know them and loved working with them. So it was kind of like all these seeds have been planted, and Hazel happened to be the life stage I hadn't touched quite yet, although I started to dabble with that audience. When my co-founder and I met, I was working at Zola at the time, but I was doing freelance on the side, as most designers do. I was actually supporting a lot of early stage female founders in building their decks, the presentation that they give to investors for their like earliest stage. So my co-founder reached out. My husband made the introduction. He didn't even tell me. So I just got the email from Stephen Cruz, who's my co-founder. We connected, and he had started to see that there was a lot of white space in the personal care space specifically, and for women. He was working in a Soho house, but for people over 50, and researching brand partnerships. That's how we discovered this white space. We got connected and just started user research, talked to these women. That's essentially where Hazel started.
Before you started talking to these women, did you have any idea of what you wanted Hazel to be and what issues you wanted the brand to target?
We knew we wanted to focus on women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. So that's where the conversation started. I just started asking them, what are your pain points? What are the brands that you love? And what are the brands that you hate? Do you shop new brands? Do you shop legacy brands? So when it came to this category, how we kind of figured that out was we knew there was something in the personal care space. So we asked a lot about like, what does your bathroom shelves look like? What's in there? And we basically established there was the shelf on the wall of the products that they love. Their beauty, their skincare, those ones they're proud to use. And then they had this whole group of products that they were hiding behind the cleaning supplies. They didn't want anyone to know that they were using them. There was just so much shame and stigma associated with them. And so that's where we dug deeper and eventually uncovered the incontinence category. And specifically, there were women that wore products that exist today and others that were avoiding the aisle completely. For the women that were wearing the products, if they needed a full absorbent product, they were wearing what we refer to as like an adult diaper. They were changing the way that they dressed because of the bulkiness, so longer tops. They were very self-conscious when they were at the office because you could hear it swish when they walked. It was really impacting their quality of life. And with that audience, it was clear that the product and the brands needed to be better. For the audience that wouldn't even walk down the aisle, they were often wearing products for periods or wearing pads and constantly changing them throughout the day, but they would never, ever wear an adult diaper. They had stopped running, you know, they had stopped going to their workout classes, and they couldn't live life in the way that they wanted to. And I think it's important to say too, like the women that we're talking to are super stylish. They are not at all what you would assume the stereotype of a woman that wears a product like an adult diaper. They can be anywhere from their 40s all the way through their 80s, but they are in their second careers, they're executives at companies, they have full lives. As we began to talk to them, both segments, we really just found they wanted a great pair of underwear that happened to absorb up to a bladder full of liquid. And what I mean by underwear, it had to go under their workout leggings. And so we had to design something that could go under the leggings. No one knows what's under there, and it has to be discreet. And so that's ultimately what we did. We worked with a fashion team and a material scientist that had worked at Johnson & Johnson for over 20 years. He had developed their feminine care lines. He knew this audience. He knew the constraints within the category. We formed that wish list of what she wanted, how this product could be better. So obviously underwear, high-waisted. She wanted it to feel secure, and she wanted to feel good. And so when we went to manufacturers and we said, this is what needs to change with the existing products, they essentially pushed us away. They said, this is the product you can do. They showed us a white labeled version of the diaper that exists with the legacy brand. And we said, you know, we can't put a better brand on that. You can't make it a pretty packaging and then package it and that in it. It wouldn't work. So that's when we worked with the fashion design team and the material scientists to develop our own materials, unique fibers and technology, and then marry that with fashion design to make it look like underwear. We built out our own manufacturing process and then built our own supply chain for those materials.
And I just noticed then that you started talking in the third person when you were describing Hazel. You said you were trying to find out what kind of woman she is. And that third person is something I also noticed on your website. You describe the brand in the third person. For example, you say, quote, she's evolving exquisitely, end quote, in your manifesto. And when I was reading the website, I found it really humanized the brand. How do you think the decision to incorporate this third person has helped you to establish your brand identity?
Yeah, so a big part of the brand was making sure that our consumer was included in it. And so we formed a customer advisory board, and then I talked with hundreds and hundreds of women. And ultimately, we decided to name the brand Hazel because it becomes a persona. And we really have this kind of concept of our voice and tone where it's your best friend, but your best friend that's in the know. She has all the answers, but she'll also speak to you very directly. That's really, you know, when we had in mind that brand persona, that was really important. The other side to it, when we wrote our manifesto, a lot of manifestos are about the brand. And I wanted it to not be about us, but all about her. And by her, I always refer to her as our consumer. Really shedding a light on women that we're talking to every day that, again, doesn't fit the stereotype. That's someone that's not just, you know, women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, but also, you know, women my age. I'm in my 30s, women in their 20s. And it encourages this cross-generational conversation, which was really important for me. I didn't want to be, you know, in my 60s and all of a sudden experience perimenopausal symptoms, which leakage is one of those symptoms or can be, and not know what's happening or think there's something wrong with me. And so that's something with the brand that we really make a point to do is educate and share.
And how did you decide to marry this image of luxury with a feminine healthcare brand? Was this part of your mission to destigmatize some of the conversation around incontinence?
When we talked to, you know, so many different women and got to know really what the brands that she loved and the brands that she hated, we really saw, especially the brands that she loved, those were like the Chloe, the Chanel, those like high-end luxury brands. We looked to those as much as you would assume like this category can never be fashion. We really wanted to see, is this a possibility? And so we tested that into various brand identities, actually. So we looked into a more medical version of what Hazel could be. We looked into a more casual version, and then we looked into a more beauty and fashion inspired brand. And ultimately, that's what resonated with our customer, showing her, here's how we're talking about leakage, the words that we're using, and then the visuals. There's a lot of like stereotypical stuff. So of course we put that in front of her, legacy brands, put that in front of her to get her feedback, and then just went the opposite route. So we ended up developing a brand inspired by her beauty supplies. So when it came to the packaging, it had to be something she could have on the shelf. And then the visuals. So when it came to photography, we really were very thoughtful in the models that we showed, but also what they were wearing. So really cute dresses, puff sleeves, some ruffles, like just not treating it at all like something wrong with her, but just really showing, what is she wearing every day? She's super chic. Let's show her in a way that is chic. We have that ability to elevate the whole look and feel of the category because at the end of the day, we knew we wanted a product that matched the brand. When it comes to the imagery, you know, you think about when she gets an email or she's looking through her Instagram feed, she doesn't want it to be obvious. So what's something that she'd be willing to repost, but is a nod to what she's experiencing without being overt?
And do you think that's where you stand out from other brands?
Definitely. It's that, and it's also leading with experiences. So as I mentioned before, you know, when we were talking with investors and definitely other women about what is it like to experience leaks, and they were telling us about the experiences. They weren't telling us they had incontinence. That word did not resonate in user research at all. Instead of leading kind of with data, some brands will be like, okay, 1 in 2 women over 50 experience leaks. Yes, that's important to know. It makes you feel like you're not alone, but at the same time, it just feels like a statistic, and you don't want to be a statistic. So leading with those experiences that are just super relatable has worked really well.
Would you say that in creating the visual and the design and the brand that you've kind of created a community as well?
Oh, definitely. And that was really important because, you know, to the point of we don't want women to feel alone or like something's wrong with them. And so creating that community was really important. So that's something that happened before we even launched with, you know, the advisory board that we created, but then also just the community we created of all these women that are so powerful, so chic, that have, you know, these businesses that are promoting aging well. They're networking in a way that is really just promoting this aging gracefully message, being a part of that community, and then combining it with the femme care. We see leakage or incontinence as something you experience just like you would periods or postpartum or sexual wellness products. It was really important to kind of frame our brand in that space so that, again, that intergenerational conversation continues.
And how did you find when you were doing your market research, how did you find those cross-generational conversations?
Yeah, it was something we saw with trends, especially on social media, where, you know, everyone at this point is talking about periods and sex and then infertility. That's another one. Miscarriage. Seeing that talked about, and then all of a sudden, what happens after? No one was talking about. You don't just stop living. As much as like your marketing efforts would like you to think, the lack of visuals in terms of seeing women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, these women are amazing and they're doing incredible things. We really saw those trends that were happening with the younger women and wanted to just continue the conversation.
We'll be right back. Expanding on your point about the importance of showing that women are still doing amazing things after pregnancy, I'm wondering, in your opinion, do you think the fashion industry has reached a place of inclusivity? And how have you found working with a brand that targets non-visible health obstacles that do still have a taboo stigma around them?
Yeah. So from a fashion side, I think it's really interesting. I definitely think we've made strides to inclusivity, even just reflecting on like New York Fashion Week. You know, all of a sudden you were seeing some brands that were showing curvy women, plus size women, women of different colors and backgrounds and abilities. I think that was very exciting to see. But you're still seeing a lot of brands follow the status quo. So I still think there's a lot of more work to do. That was something with Hazel I was really excited to do, was be able to show women of all different ages, not just show women over 50 that have silver hair, but show dyed hair, but also showing women that are 20 years younger. Postpartum is a secondary audience for us. So making sure we use our platform to be inclusive and really show women that are aspirational, but still relatable at the end of the day.
And kind of expanding on the fashion industry and like the ferocity of this market, when you think of New York, think of it as a big fashion capital.
Yeah.
How have you found navigating this industry as a founder of a small and developing business?
It's been interesting. I think the benefit that I had coming into this was I had worked with a company that produced their own fashion, you know, their own clothing. And so I actually went back to the consultants that started with my old company. So I had the benefit of knowing they were startup friendly and they were inclusive. And they also happened to have technical fashion background. They also designed cross sizes. They had a lot of experience in curvy or plus size fashion.
When you were talking about the journey that led to the creation of Hazel, you touched briefly on investors. And that's something I'm really interested in, is finding that investor fit. How did you find that process of finding appropriate investors, and how important was it for you to find investors that understood the importance of your product?
when we went into this process, we had to make sure that each investor could empathize with our consumer. They understood the challenges of the manufacturing, the technical side, why it's so difficult to break in, and really understand the need for this. We did have investor meetings that they would be like, well, why don't women want to wear the existing products? And I'm holding it up like, no. So there were those, and they were definitely not a good fit. And then there were people like our investors that we brought in. They are ex-executives from those legacy brands. They have launched their own, even in the similar categories like baby diaper industry. So they get it. And that was so valuable. We also talked to a lot of women who had had kids. We talked to one investor and she had young kids. And she's like, I just want to jump on a trampoline again.
Delving deeper into the importance of finding this investor fit and basing your product development off of customer experience. This was something I imagine you also applied when you were looking for your co-founder.
Yeah, I mean, it was really important in just kind of in the very beginning. You know, I was at a point in my career where, and even years before, I had known I wanted to start a company. That was something that, you know, I used to think it was a moment in college where I never really saw myself as a leader, but I was in this group and they had to choose someone to lead the team and they all chose me. And I was like, who, me? I'm just a really great party planner and I love people and I'm like have a lot of friends. I thought those were like just my skills that, you know, didn't apply to leadership. You know, leadership was very daunting. So it was like, that was the start. When it came to my co-founder and I was kind of going into this opportunity, something that was really important to me was I know my skill sets and I know what I'm really good at. I needed a co-founder that could balance me out and fill my holes. I had done so many different things in my startups that I had worked with, but I had a huge gap on the business and finance side. And so that's where my co-founder came in. He could build the strategy. I could help build the team, figure out, you know, what's that creative vision? How do we want the brand to look and feel? How do we want our customer to feel running all those user interviews? We really were able to balance out a lot and accomplish a lot for two people. So that was really important. When it came to investors, same idea. We always have a list of about three things. Here are the things that we're focused on that we're looking for investors that have connections or experience or other brands that they've invested in that are going to fill in the gaps or the things that we need to accomplish. All of that is super, super important. It depends on the stage of the business, but each time we go through fundraising and talk to investors, they always have to have something very specific that fits the needs that we're looking for.
So I really want to go back and just touch on your college experience when you were selected as a leader and how you came to learn that leadership comes in different forms. I think that's something that really resonates in my own life experiences. How do you think your role as a co-founder allowed you to grow in confidence, to recognize yourself as a leader, and to acknowledge that leadership does come in different forms?
Yeah, in my role, definitely. But even before that, I had some great founders that I worked for that didn't fit the stereotype. They were a little more introverted, a little more quiet, and they led so strong. They were such strong leaders and such great examples. That really changed my view. I think I realized I may have had leadership skills kind of going into my career, but then especially after that experience in college, that kind of planted the seed. But then actually seeing those people in leadership positions and then working for them and actually seeing how it plays out day to day was so valuable, because I definitely didn't fit that stereotype. I'm not a very like aggressive, loud person. I lead very much with kind of authenticity. I read this book one time that's called The Myth of the Nice Girl, by Fran Hauser. She's actually one of our investors. She wrote this book about how, you know, you can be nice and you can get your work done and you can lead very well by being nice. You don't have to be mean or aggressive. It was really important just to see those examples.
Touching on that, how has your experience as a founder been different to what you expected it to be?
I think going into this, you know, I'm very type A. I over-research. So I felt like I was educated, but I also realized that every experience looks different. One of the reasons why I wanted to go into this was I love to be challenged. So I wanted to be challenged every single day. I didn't necessarily know what those challenges would be, but it was being open to that. There was kind of the mindset going in. And of course, I had an idea of what this would be, but I also had no idea what to expect in terms of what it's been like now. I mean, it's been everything I wanted and more. I've been challenged more than I could ever imagine, both personally and professionally. I've learned so much about myself and what I'm capable of. I just feel so lucky to have met so many incredible people through this journey. Overall, it was better than I could have imagined.
I think think these qualities shine through as well from the roots of you as its co-founder to the roots of the business and beyond.
And I'd love to know, what are some of your long-term goals for Hazel?
Yeah, so, you know, we were starting out with that hero product we launched in January. I will say one of the goals, I still can't believe it happened. 2 weeks after we launched, we were published in Vogue, and that was so huge. And so definitely, you know, get another Vogue article long term. Of course, press is always a great thing, so that's always on the long term horizon. But we want to be where our consumer is, so we really want to meet her needs and be where she's buying product today, and that's in retail. And we want to come out with more products. We've developed the manufacturing in a way that allows us to come out with any style and any color, so we really want to treat it as like this balance of fast fashion and non-woven, which is the type of material and process that we have. And so really being able to treat it just like she would her underwear drawer. Like, this isn't just, you know, a lot of the legacy brands only have a couple of colors, not different styles. And so really being able to treat it just like underwear, so she feels, you know, it's normal. So coming out with seasonal colors, patterns, being able to collaborate with different people to come out with different artists to come out with different patterns and designs. There's a lot in just even that hero product. And we want to meet her needs as it relates to leakage specifically. But as we continue to develop the brand and get to know our customer, there'll be much more that she tells us that she wants, and we'll definitely take her lead.
I find it so exciting. Just my last question for you. What's one piece of advice that you'd give to your younger self looking back?
As a young kid, you know, I went to middle school and high school in a small military town. It was a smaller town in Georgia, and I didn't know a lot of women in leadership. I didn't know a lot of career options. I think, you know, as a young kid, it's a balance of you can do anything you want to do, but you have to know what that is. So just meet as many people as possible, get to know them and their stories. Don't be afraid to, you know, ask someone out for coffee, a cold email or text. Just dream really big and definitely move to New York.
Thank you so much for being here and for sharing, Hazel.
Thank you for having me.
And that's the end of today's episode. Thank you so much to Aubrey for sharing her story and the creation of Hazel. Join me next week for the final episode of Season 1 of Urban Tales, where I will be joined by Bennett Byerly, co-founder of Verb Energy, a reimagined energy bar that incorporates green tea in its formula as a substitute for caffeine. As a business that started on the college campus of Yale University, Bennett and his co-founders have since expanded to New York City, where they now have their foundations, as well as a growing online presence. Next week, Bennett and I will discuss how he found a gap in the market of the health and wellness industry, how this experience changed when he and his founders arrived to New York City, and their focus on sustainability moving forward. In the meantime, if you're looking for more from Urban Tales, you can find new episodes every Tuesday from 2 p.m. or catch up on any missed episodes wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.